Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Welcome to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, host of this show. Now, I've been back in Dunedin now for a few weeks, and as you know, if you listen to this show regularly, I've recently spent a lot of time on freighter ships and buses and hitching during my recent 2 years of travel and time in Ireland. Now, part of the reason that I wanted to travel in this way was that all of these options contribute to greenhouse gases and less than they do by flying. But my aspirations unraveled a bit, I have to confess, on my return journey, because when I got to Colombia, I found that the freighter company was no longer taking passengers. Now, I also had a lot of other reasons why I wanted to get back to Dunedin sooner rather than later. So I decided to fly and be grateful that I could. I am disappointed about it, but as a friend suggested to me, I can plant a lot of trees. And, you know, planting trees, well, this is a good idea for lots and lots of reasons. So, yes, I'm very keen to do that. But in today's programme, what I want to do is to stand back a little bit and look at how the huge expansion of flights globally can be tackled through carbon offsetting, basically doing things like planting trees. Is carbon offsetting a useful strategy to tackle climate change? Should the responsibility and actions taken to reduce carbon emissions lie with each of us individually, or should our governments or airlines be leading the way? To help me answer these questions in the Otago Access radio studio today is Professor James Higham from the Tourism Department at the University of Otago. Now, in 2009, James initiated a program called Climate Change and Long-Haul Aviation. So he's the man to talk to. So thank you so much, James, for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
So that was a bit of a long introduction, James, but I needed to get it off my chest about how my journey ended, you see. Mm. So, but I think everyone so far has been quite understanding, so that's nice.
Fair enough, too.
But and I had a great time. So, but now, James, so you know, you're obviously also very interested in carbon emissions around long-haul travel in particular. So very briefly, just because I didn't do it myself, could you talk to us a little bit about carbon offsetting and what it basically means?
Yeah, so just to backtrack, you mentioned 2009 and my research program looking at aviation and emissions. This is a huge issue for New Zealand. This is a huge issue for the New Zealand tourism industry, and it raises all sorts of fascinating questions about the sustainability of tourism as an industry and the sustainability of our own travel behaviours individually. Carbon offsetting has been around for a number of years now, and it's basically this philosophy that individuals who do expend carbon in various ways in their lives, and air travel is a significant source of personal emissions, if they want to feel some sort of responsibility for those emissions, then they can try and offset their travel. And there are various ways that they can do this. Many airlines offer carbon offsetting, which is available at the point of booking, and a cost may be met by the traveller that can be invested by the airline company or through offsetting programs to do things like, as you mentioned, planting trees. The idea being that those trees, as they grow, will absorb carbon and offset the carbon that your travel has put into the atmosphere. It's pretty contentious.
Mm,
there are
it is.
Lots of debates
yes.
around carbon offsetting. Some feel that it's one way that individuals can try and account for their emissions, but there are lots of contentious debates around the effectiveness of carbon offsetting, and there are many who feel that reducing emissions at source is the key rather than trying to offset them subsequently.
Yes, because I guess, well, the answer to the question is carbon offsetting working? Is no, because we're seeing what looks like an exponential increase in flights, aren't we?
It is, exponentially. We're seeing the number of aeroplanes in the air increasing. We're seeing the number of people flying increasing. We're seeing the distances that they travel increasing year on year. And this poses a massive problem because the volume and the scale of growth of the aviation industry is such that really offsetting becomes impractical.
Right, okay. We haven't got enough land on the planet to grow all these trees.
There was an interesting study conducted by some colleagues of mine in physics, Inga Smith and Craig Roger, looking at how New Zealand could offset the emissions associated with all of our international arrivals into New Zealand, and we'd soon run out of space.
Yeah.
Sadly.
And we're a country that has room to grow trees.
Yep.
So then looking at collective responses, what could that look like? You just touched on it there, but explain that a bit more.
Yeah, so through the first years of my research program, I was really interested in how individuals are responding to this conundrum, if they are at all. As the research program advanced, I became more and more frustrated, really, with the realization that a lot of people are really concerned about climate change, but very few are doing anything about it. You're one person who inspires us because you have done something about it. But for most people, taking 2 years out of their careers or away from families or such like are too great a compromises for them to even entertain.
It had to fit in with certain things, you know. For me, it was a midlife adventure as well.
Yeah, right. And I can imagine at certain stages of life, this could be the sort of adventure that people would like to undertake. But for most people and for most of their lives, these options are unavailable to them, realistically. So I reached the point, really, where it dawned on me that individual personal sacrifice, reducing air travel or stopping air travel altogether, really is unlikely to satisfactorily resolve the problem, because individuals may sacrifice, but most people aren't, and that's why the industry continues to grow apace. So that really led me and some of my colleagues at the university to think about, what about collective action? If individuals aren't changing or changing fast enough or inadequately to respond to the problem, then what can be done collectively? What might governments do? What might global governance organizations do? What might the airlines do? These are really important questions, I think, for us to ask.
Right. So did you come up with some ideas, or what kind of...
Well, there have been some very interesting developments over the last couple of years. One, of course, has been the Paris Climate Accord. Agreement was reached in September, October 2015, and the accord was signed by many countries around the world early the following year, which commits governments to trying to stabilize anthropogenic climate change within the 1.5 degrees of pre-industrial levels. Unfortunately, the accord didn't accommodate air travel and maritime. And these are two massive sectors. We've already talked about how rapidly the aviation industry is expanding globally.
So tell me, why do you think that is? Why didn't they incorporate it?
There is a long history stretching back to Kyoto inability to adequately respond to this issue at the global level. Part of the issues around confusion of allocation of responsibility. So when airlines travel internationally, who's responsible for those emissions? Is it the airline or the country of the airline? Is it the destination that those tourists are traveling to or returning from? Is it the nationalities of all the passengers on board that might be from countries all around the world? It's really complex.
Yes.
So there have been some efforts to try and address domestic aviation emissions, the Australian government tried to accommodate domestic aviation emissions in its carbon tax unsuccessfully. But international emissions are really contested, and it's really difficult to allocate those emissions.
And what about the airlines themselves? What kinds of responsibility are they taking?
Well, some airlines are taking more responsibility than others, and I must acknowledge Air New Zealand has really been at the forefront of making efforts to be as sustainable as possible within certain limitations. Air New Zealand has a strong commitment to sustainability and has worked closely with other key organisations such as the Department of Conservation to try and recognise and accommodate its emissions. There are limits, though, for airlines because of the limitations of technology. And whilst there have been promises of technical solutions, electric flight, for example, the reality is that those promises are unlikely to come to fruition. And if they are, they are decades away. So they're really outside the time frame for our societies to meaningfully respond to the immediate climate challenge.
Yes, recently a friend from the US excitedly sent me an email with a link, you know, for biofuels. And I had to reply, well, actually, this could be another problem because it was, you know, it was growing a crop for biofuels for a plane.
Yeah. It's it kind of takes us back to the offsetting question. Yeah. Is this the way we need to use viable arable land to grow plants to help us to continue to fly when we have issues of poverty in the world? So, again, there are all sorts of issues that are complex to consider.
I think whatever way around it, we're going to have to face a future where we are flying less.
Well, post Paris, the International Civil Aviation Organization was charged with developing a solution and taking a lead globally. So when we talk about collective action, we do need to talk about ICAO. And they dedicated the Montreal General Assembly in 2016 to address this issue. But many commentators have said that their recommendations are inadequate. They do relate to carbon offsetting. The problem is that there's no commitment to actually reducing aviation emissions at source, which is what most people think is necessary.
Yeah, okay. So carbon offsetting can be part of it. So at the individual level, you know, because obviously we can't always be rulers of the world and make all these changes that we see need to be made. As an individual, what are some of your favourites or least favourites choices of carbon offsetting methods?
Well, to be honest, if I think about individual responses to this issue, I would encourage people to look into carbon offsetting. I encourage people to think about carbon offsetting. It's often been said that carbon offsetting is an important first step towards people thinking really carefully about their personal emissions. But there are counter-arguments. There are counter-arguments to carbon offsetting. Some argue that when individuals take personal responsibility for their emissions, they're kind of letting the airlines off the hook and allowing industry to get away without changing their own industries and shifting their own industries towards a more sustainable emissions pathway. So I would, you know, if I was thinking about this from the individual level, you're right, we can't be the rulers of the world, but we can try and influence the rulers of the world. So it's important for us to think about who represents New Zealand on the International Civil Aviation Organization. It's important for us to think about our Ministry of Transportation. It's important for us to try and influence our government to take climate change really seriously. And we now have a government that is engaged in the conversation about climate change. Carbon offsetting may be a stepping stone towards people thinking about the need to fly, because flying has become part of our everyday lives. But the need to fly perhaps has become overstated. Maybe we need to think less about traveling so far. If we can reduce distance of flights, then we immediately reduce our emissions profile. And we need to think about taking travel options that keep us a little bit closer to home more often than not.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that does happen to a certain extent. It is partly, as you say, because we're in New Zealand, we are very distant from most other places. But yeah, there's certainly, we've got a lot of things to visit here in New Zealand. I'm also wondering about at the workplace level, you know, if carbon offsetting was very much a part of how workplaces did their businesses, and that also might lead to a reduction, because obviously then it's a cost to the business.
So yes, we do certainly see people feeling that they're kind of tied into systems through their workplaces, and feel almost unable to escape the regime, if you like, of high mobility, professional mobility. We've also seen a blurring of personal and professional air travel mobilities. So people travel for work and perhaps dovetail that with leisure travel, vice versa. So again, we do need to think about this in our professional capacities, and it may be that there is scope to offset, if you like, the amount of travel by connecting virtually through Zoom and Skype, attending webinars, attending conferences virtually rather than traveling to attend conferences, perhaps choosing conferences that are a fraction of the distance of the more distant conferences, perhaps traveling to conferences every second or third year rather than every year. These are steps that we can take that dramatically reduce our professional emissions. So these are things we need to be thinking about.
Yes, and discussing, you know, at the department level and so forth.
Yeah. Absolutely, making it part of the conversation and encouraging people to think about the role that they may play in their personal lives and in their professional lives.
Because even though if you feel you do have to make the flight, there are even also different ways that you might decide perhaps to, you know, get the bus to Christchurch and fly from there, just to reduce perhaps the number of connections that you might need to make.
That's right. I talk to friends and colleagues occasionally who are very mindful of this, numbers of connecting flights or direct services, and these are things that we perhaps need to be more mindful of.
Yes. So then, what do you think then? Well, we've nearly kind of answered it. You know, should we be focusing on the individual or at the collective action? Who should be doing the most?
Yeah, I think both should be doing the most. I'm not saying for a minute that we should focus on collective action as an excuse for individuals to make no changes in their lives and to take no action. There are some very interesting statistics around people who travel and how far those people travel when it comes to aviation. So in actual fact, people who fly are a small minority of the global population, but those people might be in many cases termed extremely high emitters because they fly. They don't just fly, they fly a lot. And travel vast distances each year by air travel. So those individuals in particular need to take responsibility for their personal emissions. And we all need to. I think we all need to be thinking about these things at the individual level. But individuals can also bear influence over collective action. And I think that the solution to aviation emissions does lie with collective action. And so being mindful and active at the collective level with our governments and with the industry players, I think is really important.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's relevant to any of the listeners, but actually one thing I also think is important is everyone not demanding that they go business class or first class, because therefore, you know, we're going to be creating fleets of airplanes that take fewer passengers.
That's absolutely right. Loadings on aircraft and class of travel, we can think about these things in terms of individual emissions profiles. And the profile of a first class flight is very different to a business class, and that too is very different to an economy class of travel. So these are things that perhaps we need to be internalizing, thinking about and responding to.
Yeah. So, James, when you're feeling very optimistic, you know, maybe you've had a beer or something and the weather's nice, What are your positive thoughts about directions for the future for long-haul flight or for just the flight industry in general?
Yeah, well, I don't need beer to be optimistic. I'm always optimistic most of the time. I'm optimistic about the future. The future of aviation will differ very much on a regional basis. I don't argue for a second that New Zealand will have a zero-flight future because of our geographical location. Contrasting with continental countries in Asia and in Europe, where there are all sorts of options to change our systems of transportation away, particularly from short-haul flights. You know, short-haul flights are less than 200 or 300 kilometres. In countries where there are other transport modes, like road and rail, particularly rail, fast-speed rail, being developed in China and other parts of the world, it makes sense for governments to lead those modal shift transitions away from high emission transport modes to those that are far more sustainable. Rail, electric vehicle fleets, we're seeing successions of electric vehicle fleets. In China now, in many of the major urban destinations and the big attractions, there are rows and rows and rows of charge stations for electric coaches, tour buses. So we're seeing these transitions in action. Flying will always be important to New Zealanders, but the future of flying may be very different to the flying that we know of today.
Right. Okay. Well, we look forward to that. And perhaps I also think perhaps we could have the return of the passenger ship, not the cruise ship, which has a very large ecological footprint, but, you know, the old-fashioned passenger ships, which, and perhaps wind-assisted.
Yeah, I think these are some fascinating transport futures and in many cases very desirable transport futures. And I think we're rapidly approaching a time of great change in our global transportation systems.
Right. Okay. So for people who are interested in looking at this more in depth, are there any books or websites that you would recommend people to have a look at? Or?
Yeah, there are various resources. Websites are a great start. Look at the sustainability charters for airlines, for example, for airports, for places of employment. Why not look at the International Civil Aviation Organization online learn a little bit more about the responsibilities that they're charged with judge the extent to which those responsibilities are being met. And there are books available. Google keyword searches. I had a former PhD student recently who published a book titled Low Carbon Tourism Transitions, Mobility Transitions, which is all about some of these transitions that are getting underway in New Zealand. And are advanced in various degrees in different parts around the world. So there are some great textbooks that can be read as well.
That's right, because it's getting our heads around thinking that this doesn't have to be the way it is into the future. We can change things.
There are all sorts of ways that we could change things. And many aspects of our contemporary transportation systems are actually undesirable. And we need to recognize that and respond, changing systems of provision that allow people far greater freedoms to transport themselves in ways that are healthy and sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you, James. And I'll just add, because I was doing a little search too, it was quite an interesting website. I don't know if you've looked at it. It's called Atmosphere, and it ranks the different airlines in terms of their air efficiency. And it changes year by year, and it's different for domestic versus international flights. But it's looking at, I guess how many chairs they can get in there and how efficient the fuel is and everything like that. So.
Another useful resource for people who are interested.
Okay, so thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, and my guest today was Professor James Higham from the Department of Tourism at the University of Otago. Now, if you would like to listen to the show again, you can download it as a podcast from the Otago Access Radio website at oar.org.nz. It's also aired again on Monday at 8:30. And Eco Living in Action is supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. As they affect our city, Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to www.sustainabledunedincity.org.nz.
Jamu.